All right, what's up, guys? You guys ready to start a new series? We are going through the book of Hosea, starting tonight for about the next 6 weeks or so. So before we jump in, think back with me, if you will, to what you were doing last night around 6 o'clock, okay? And then I'll invite you into what I was doing around 6 o'clock last night. So Luke and Emma, my older two, have done basketball and soccer, and they just entered the T-ball world. So my wife left the house and left me with our 18-month-old twin daughters at home, Ari and Hazel. And right before she left, she pureed chili for them, okay? So they've got little bowls of chili sitting on their high chairs, and they've just started learning to eat with spoons, all right? And they each had a few pieces of cornbread, which they were eating for the first time. And so within a short period of time after my wife's gone, everything broke loose, and the girls have chili all over their faces, and it's all over their outfits. And my daughter Hazel discovered that cornbread is her favorite food in the entire world. And so she's putting these entire pieces of cornbread into her mouth and just going, and I got a little bit scared of her, right? Well, I kind of took advantage of the fact that she was loving the cornbread so much, so I just threw some extra cornbread on her tray and took my other daughter, Aria, and stripped her down and got her in the bathtub, and I'm washing her off, and then every once in a while, I'm running back out into the kitchen to make sure that Hazel's not choking, right? And I'm running back, and, you know, it's a twin parent thing, all right? So I'm scrubbing Ari off while I get her done and get her out of the tub, and I dry her hair off and get her ready and put her diaper on, put her PJs on, and I go out and I grab Hazel, and there's, you know, by this time, it looks like cornbread has gone through a wood chipper, and it's just everywhere, all over the floor, everywhere, right? And chili is all over the place. And so I pull her out, I get her naked, I throw her in the tub, get her washed off, and get her all dressed, PJs, diaper, everything. So she's ready for bed. I'm like, oh man, I can kind of breathe easy a little bit here, and then start to clean up. So I go in and start to clean up the kitchen. And my daughter Aria comes up to me, and she grabs the back of her diaper, and she goes, poof, which is how she says poop, right? And I'm like, oh, great, all right. So I grab her and go in, change the diaper, and get that taken care of, go back out, try to finish cleaning up the kitchen. Well, my daughter Hazel comes in at that moment, and she's got her PJs off, so she's learned how to work the zipper. So she just unzips the footy pajamas, right, all the way down, and just takes them off. And I noticed that her diaper is sagging pretty low at this point. So I'm like, oh, man, I just gave her a bath. Well, when little girls are teething, they get diarrhea. So she's got just this big pile of diarrhea in her diaper. So I take her over to the changing table and change her. I still haven't finished cleaning the kitchen yet. So I go back to the kitchen, and I'm still continuing to clean up the kitchen. And Aria walks up to me again, grabs her diaper. Poof. You have got to be kidding me, right? So she's got a turd in her diaper, and pretty soon I'm cleaning that up. 20 minutes later, I'm done cleaning up the kitchen, and at that moment, you know, my wife walks in with Luke and Emma, and we start the bedtime routine. I thought I was going to get a little bit of R&R, but I didn't. Well, if you come to Salt Company, what percentage of the time do I start off with a story about my kids since a year and a half ago? What do you guys think? You thought I was going to illustrate something with that? I'm really not. I'm just doing, I shared it as like a survey. I would say it's over half the time, don't you think? And that's because as somebody who's standing up front communicating, my life experience basically dictates what I talk about up here. And I would say the most transformative reality that's happened in my life over the past year and a half is going from 0 to 4 kids, which has totally influenced my view of God, my view of discipline, my view of kids, all of those things. And it's influenced every aspect of my ministry. And guys, what we're going to see tonight as we open up the book of Hosea is we're going to see a man who was deeply influenced by his life circumstances. In fact, God put the circumstances of his life in place so that he would be the perfect person to talk to us about the love of God. And primarily what we're going to see in the book of Hosea is God's love characterized as the love that a husband has for his wife. That's one of the most beautiful pictures that you can possibly get of the kind of love that God has for you, sort of in its purest form. So some of you are just asking the simple question, where the heck is Hosea in the Bible? Well, if you've ever tried to find one of the minor prophets, it's sort of like finding Waldo in Where's Waldo, right? Because the minor prophets are short. Okay, minor doesn't mean that they're insignificant. It literally just means that they're shorter than the major prophets. So there was some really creative guy who put together the canon of scripture, right? So if you're looking for the book of Hosea, you might first want to look for a book called Isaiah or Jeremiah or Ezekiel or Daniel. Those are what's called the major prophets. And it's actually the first of the minor prophets. So it goes Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and then Hosea. Okay, so Hosea is the first of the 12 minor prophets. So some of you are asking, well, how do they characterize or class the minor prophets? Why do they put them in this order? Well, there's actually four groups of minor prophets that are each groups of three. And those groups are basically categorized by the time in which they were written. So the book of Hosea is one of the oldest three minor prophets, along with Amos and Micah, and they were written in the 700s BC. Okay, so that's a long stinking time ago. Okay, the book of Hosea is going to deal with the major themes of God's judgment and his salvation. And as we flip over to the book of Hosea, we're really going to see God sort of set the scene for us for the entire book. So if you would, flip with me to Hosea chapter 1, verse 1. Starts this way. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So the first thing that we see about the book of Hosea is that it's set in a time period when Israel has been divided into two kingdoms. So for those of you who don't know, at one point, Israel was one united monarchy. And in those days, the king's name was either Saul, David, or Solomon. But after Solomon, everything went to pot. And the thing got divided into two separate kingdoms. The northern kingdom was called Israel, and the southern kingdom was called Judah. So Hosea, along with a contemporary named Amos, find themselves in the northern kingdom, and they're preaching this message of both judgment and hope to a very sort of wayward people. So he writes, it says in this passage, during the days of Jeroboam. So this guy Jeroboam, he reigned in Israel from the years 793 to 753 BC. Okay? It's likely, though, that Hosea was actually prophesying in the latter days of Jeroboam's reign as king. You notice in this opening passage, it says, in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, and it doesn't mention any other kings after him. But it's actually likely that Hosea's ministry began in about 755 BC and went for 40 years to about 715 BC. Now, the reason that all those other kings that followed Jeroboam aren't mentioned is because he's really the last significant king in the northern kingdom of Israel. the five kings that followed him in Israel were all assassinated, meaning their reigns were cut short and their kingdoms were pretty insignificant. And the sixth king after Jeroboam was the last king in Israel because this group called the Assyrians from the north came in and conquered this northern group in Israel. Okay, so during this time, it was a time of political instability. And through the reigns of all these kings, Jeroboam onward, there was actually sort of a publicly sanctioned religion. And it wasn't Judaism. It was Baal worship. And what you need to know about Baal is he was believed to be the god of fertility. And so the Jews who were supposed to be giving their wholehearted worship to Yahweh, the God who had rescued them and brought them into this promised land where they were to love him with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, they had given themselves over to this god, Baal. And the way that you worshiped Baal is you essentially just had a big orgy because he was the god of fertility. So you would go up on these mountainsides and you would worship him by just having this big orgy together, and it was just craziness, crazy party, crazy drinking, crazy sex with everybody, all that kind of thing. And then you would bow down to images of Baal. And probably the worst thing about this is after the women got pregnant, after the orgies, you would take the children that Baal had given you and you would slit their throats and sacrifice them to him. So these kings who were supposed to be pointing the people of Israel back to their God Yahweh were pointing the people to Baal. What most people would say is that this is the worst period of idolatry in Israel's history. And Hosea and other prophets actually call it a time of spiritual adultery. The people in droves were turning and would rather sacrifice their children to Baal than bow the knee to the God who had rescued them out of Egypt. So Hosea writes into this situation. The book of Hosea probably spans about 40 years, and he likely started writing it when he was 18 years old and finished when he was around 58. So the book goes on, and what we're really going to look at tonight as we sort of intro the book is we're looking at who Hosea was and what his calling was as a prophet of God, a mouthpiece of God, someone who spoke for God in his time. So first we're going to look at Hosea's call, starting with verse 2. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go take to yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom. For the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord." See, imagine this. Your job is to speak for God. And the first thing that he says through you, he also says to you. And he tells you that you are to marry an adulterous woman. Now, what most commentators agree on is that at the point that Hosea married this woman, who we find out later's name is Gomer, that she was not at that time an adulteress. She had not committed adultery yet. But most of you, as you think about getting married, that thing's not on your list, right? You're not looking for someone or even thinking to ask the question like, "Hey, are you planning, like, after we get married, to commit adultery?" And you're like, "Well, actually, yeah, I kind of was. I turn 25, 30, I'll get kind of bored of you and I want to go to somebody else." And you're like, "Sweet, I'm in," right? Well, that's the situation that God calls Hosea into. And guys, I remember my dad telling me when I was around 8 years old that his first wife had committed adultery on him. And I probably just was like, Legos, cool, right? Like, had no idea what that meant, and that didn't land on me at all. And I asked him a few questions about that over the years as I was curious and things like that, but it wasn't until college that for the first time my dad and I had a real heart-to-heart about that. And I remember we were on a road trip together. We were at an IHOP in Mississippi, and I sat across the table from my dad, and I just said, Dad, would you just tell me about that? And my dad began to tell me about how his first wife had gone on a business trip, met a guy who was 20 years older than her, and had left my dad, taken all the stuff after they had been married for a few years, and just committed adultery, ended up leaving my dad for this guy and being married to him for years. And I just remember, my dad's not a big crier, but he just put his head down and just wept. 25 years later, after the fact, just that act of adultery against him was just still as if it had happened yesterday. And some of you have been affected by adultery. Maybe one of your parents or an aunt or an uncle, or you've had a brother or sister whose husband or wife has committed adultery, and you've sat across the table from that person and just seen the emotional anguish that that person is going through as they see the person that they love and have committed their entire life to act like that commitment never happened. And do you see the reason that God tells Hosea that he's to marry a woman who will commit adultery on him? He said, it's because the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord. You see, God says, when your wife commits adultery, that's the way I feel when people worship Baal instead of worshiping me. And actually, did you know that when you commit sin and when I commit sin, that God so loves us and so has committed himself to us as Christians that it rips his heart out? You're not just breaking the rules, you're breaking God's heart when you sin against him. He's not some distant, angry judge. He's a broken-hearted husband. And we're like a wayward woman who just walks away from him, even though all he's ever done is provided for us and protected us and loved us and pursued us. And so God calls his servant Hosea to live this crazy life so that he would be the perfect person to speak into our lives about what God's love is like. So next, what we're going to talk about is Hosea's obedience and how that results in kids. Okay, so we're going to talk about Hosea's kids. This is going to get a little bit weird, all right? So verse 3, it says, he went in and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Okay, so God tells Hosea, he's probably 18, 19, 20 years old, somewhere around there, that he's to marry an adulterous woman, and he immediately does what God says. Without question. He just obeys. Which is a good idea, by the way, to just obey God and to walk in what he has for you, even if it's a tough path. By the way, this is not like a description of what you're supposed to do. Okay? You guys know that? like when the Bible tells certain people to do certain things, that could be like a unique calling on your life. So I don't want you guys to get confused and be like, am I supposed to go to Vegas and like find a prostitute and marry her? No, totally not. That is not the application of this thing at all. This is a unique calling in this guy's life, and he totally obeys. And so he takes this woman to be his wife, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. And on that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Okay, this is where it gets weird. God tells Hosea to name his son God will destroy. That's what his name literally means. God will destroy. Can you imagine that? This is our baby boy, mom and dad. What'd you name him? God will destroy. Wow. You guys really went aggressive on that name, didn't you? Yes, we did. We picked it out together. Good idea, wasn't it? Well, here's the reason for this, okay? There's a couple more even weirder names that Hosea gives to his next two kids. But let me just frame this in for you a little bit. So God has told Hosea to marry Gomer because the people of Israel are like adulterous women against God. Well, when they get married, when Hosea and Gomer get married, the product of their marriage will be a faithful man with an unfaithful woman. So that child will be influenced by both parents. So what God is saying by these names is that his faithfulness and Israel's unfaithfulness has produced some terrible results. It's their fault. But there's some judgment coming. There's some consequences for their actions. And that judgment, because Hosea is meant to speak to the people, not just with his words, but with his entire life as a calling from God, those names encapsulate the judgment that is coming on Israel for their sin. So this name Jezreel means God will destroy. And in a Israelite's mind, this would have brought to mind a very important event in their history. There was this guy who was king in Israel whose name was Ahab. And God told this guy named Jehu to kill Ahab, that he was going to use him to kill him because Ahab was a very evil person. Well, Jehu took that way too far. And we read in 2 Kings 9 and 10 that he not only killed Ahab, he also saw Ahab's wife, whose name was Jezebel, looking at him out a window, and he didn't like how she looked at him. So he went up in this tower and tosses the chick out the window and killed her. All right, and so she's laying on the ground, and it says the dogs come up and lick up her blood after like a wagon runs over her. All right, and he didn't stop there. He not only killed Ahab, he also killed his 70 sons. All right, and then he just kept going from there. Right, this guy was just a bloodthirsty, absolutely crazy guy. And at the end of 2 Kings 10, it says that Jehu's heart was totally turned away from God. So God's commandment to kill Ahab turned into just a license for him to do whatever he wanted. And this event all happened at this city called Jezreel. Actually, right outside the city, in the valley of Jezreel. So in Hosea naming his son Jezreel, that event would have been brought back to mind to the Israelites. And what they realize as they hear this name is that this sin has continued. They continue to be bloodthirsty as they sacrifice their children to Baal. They continue to break God's commands and to take things way too far. And so what his name says is, because of your spiritual adultery, I can do nothing but punish you for your sin. And guys, by the way, God is very reluctant to punish us for our sin. But when we completely turn our backs on him, like the Israelites did, and do whatever we want to do, he judges us and he punishes us in hopes of turning us back into relationship with him. So Hosea's first son's name is Jezreel. God will destroy. His daughter's name is Lo-Ruhamah. Lo-Ruhamah means no mercy. Hey, you thought God will destroy was a bad name. God tells him to name his daughter no mercy. So she conceived again and bore a daughter. And the Lord said to him, call her name no mercy. For I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all. But I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow or by sword or by war or by horses or by horsemen. So the first thing to notice about this passage is sort of to contrast it with the last one. You'll notice the first line, it says, she conceived again and bore a daughter. In verse 3, it says that he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. It's interesting that the word him is removed in that second paragraph. Here's the reason, likely. This isn't his daughter. The adultery has started. See, his wife, Gomer, as God promised, would be an adulterous woman. And so she has conceived and borne him a daughter. And he's looking at this daughter and he's realizing that she doesn't really look like him. And God says, call this daughter of yours, who you've sort of adopted into your family, call her name no mercy. Because here's the thing. Just like your wife, Gomer, has started committing adultery on you, so my people have been committing spiritual adultery against me for years and years and years and years and years. And you know what? The time of mercy toward their sin is over. Maybe some of you have been in a situation like this, where one of your parents is just repeatedly committing adultery against the other one of your parents. And the faithful parent would like to stay, but the sin makes it impossible. So there has to be this period of separation. There has to be this period where you say, you got to move out of the house. I can't put up with this anymore. I can't deal with this anymore. And as we persist in our sin and as Israel persisted in their sin, at some point God says, you can have what you want. I can't force you to receive my mercy. If you turn your back on it, I can't give it to you. And so he illustrates that by having Hosea name his child no mercy. And then to sort of bait Israel, what he says is, but I will give mercy to Judah. You see, he's saying, Judah, they've turned back to me. They've received my mercy. But you guys, you've persisted in your sin for so long. You've done whatever you want for so long that I'm not going to give you mercy. You've got judgment coming. I'm not going to forgive you. You've been away from me for too long. And some of you have experienced that, right? When you start to live with compromise, and you actually begin to think that that life of sin will satisfy you, and you don't even really want relationship with God anymore. And although he would like to pull you close, and he would like to be your husband, and he would like to speak tenderly to you, and he'd like to care for your soul, you've pushed him away. And so he says, okay, no mercy. So Hosea's got two kids now. God will destroy and no mercy. He's got a third one coming. The name of his last son is Lo Ami, which means not my people. Okay, so when she had weaned no mercy, she conceived and bore a son. And the Lord said, call his name not my people, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. So you notice again, it doesn't say she conceived and bore him a son. It says she conceived and bore a son, likely another son as a result of her adultery. Probably a different father than even the father of their second child. And you'll notice up to this point, God has been talking about Israel. But in verse 9, he talks to Israel. He says in the second half of verse 9, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. Just this very pointed conversation God is having with his people through the event of the birth of Hosea's third child. You understand how Hosea must be feeling in this moment, right? It's like, you imagine the conversations that they had between when no mercy and not my people were born, right? It's like, I can tell this child doesn't look like me, and have you been running around on me? Have you been cheating? He's checking her cell phone, right? See what guys she's been calling, and they've gone to counseling a few times and stuff like that, and then she ends up running out on him again, and it's obvious that this isn't his child either. And God says, hey, Hosea, you know how you feel right now looking at this child? You're looking at this child and you're saying, this is not my son. Okay, this is like the most offensive name you could ever give to a kid, isn't it? Hey, this is my son. His name's not my son. Right? And God's saying, man, his whole purpose in calling the Israelites out of Egypt was that they would be his people and he would be their God. And he's gotten to this point because of the brazenness of their spiritual adultery, where he wants to hold on to them, but he knows that they need judgment so that they'll turn back to him. So he says, here's where I'm at with you right now. Because you've chosen to walk away from me, I no longer see you as my people. So where are you at right now? As you sit in your seat, where are you at in your relationship with God? Are there areas of just compromise in your life? Are there ways that he's been pursuing you and he's been speaking to you, maybe through a friend or maybe through church or some song that you've been listening to? He's been trying to get your attention and you've just kept turning your back on him. And tonight, honestly, you come into this room and you just feel at a total distance from God. Like you've chosen not to be his son or daughter. You've just rejected him so many times that he's just said, okay, have what you want. You're not my son. You're not my daughter. Because that's what you've chosen. Or you're like Gomer. You prefer just adultery, doing your own thing. So you're kind of down that path. And you've realized, man, I don't know if this is what I really want. So the question is, for people in the middle of spiritual adultery, is there any hope? And thankfully, the answer is yes. Although judgment is coming to the people of God in the near future, Hosea has a vision of the future. You see, God's purpose in judging his people is not to condemn them, it's actually to redeem them. So here's Hosea's vision, starting with verse 10 and going through 2 verse 1. It says this, "Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And in the place where it was said to them, 'You are not my people,' it shall be said to them, 'Children of the living God.' And the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together, and they shall appoint for themselves one head, and they shall go up from the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Say to your brothers, 'You are my people,' and to your sisters, 'You have received mercy.'" See, even though God does judge us, the purpose of his judgment is to turn us back to him. He lets us experience the consequences of our sin, and at times he brings hard consequences for our sin, but it's so that we'll come back to him because he's the perfect husband and he loves us that much. He won't let us go. That's the meaning of God's jealous love. His love cannot let you go. So the metaphor sort of changes in this passage. And God shows himself not only to be the perfect husband, he also shows himself to be this unbelievable father. And he said, "Listen, your names were God Will Destroy, No Mercy, and Not My People." And do you see what he says in this passage? Let me put this up on the screen. He says this. The name God Will Destroy, God says he's going to change to God Will Restore. You see, this name Jezreel, it actually has a double meaning. It can either mean destroy or it can mean restore. So what he's saying is, hey, great shall be the day of Jezreel. There's a day coming when after God has destroyed you, he's going to restore you. And then he says, hey, listen, you used to have this name, Not My People. And that name is going to be changed to Children of the Living God. See, God's saying, listen, I'm not going to forsake you forever. I want to pull you back in. Even though you've committed some horrible sin against me, I want to pull you back in. Even though you've experienced the consequences of that sin, even though you come here tonight and you're broken because of your sin and your choices, I want to welcome you back in. And then he says, man, you'd so turned your back on me that I had named you No Mercy. And I'm changing your name to You Have Received Mercy in the future. You see, God's heart is not a heart to judge you for your sin here tonight, although he will, but only to turn you around. He wants to show you mercy. So just imagine this scene. There's a dad. And this dad is just sitting across the table from his daughter. And a few years prior, his daughter was 18 and she just ran away from home. And the dad would call her and just plead with her to come home. And he would tell her about the consequences of her actions and that this guy that she was with was not a good guy. And she thought that this guy loved her. And it seemed like he did for about a year, but then he started hitting her. And then he started beating her. And he started telling her that if she told her dad, that he'd kill her. And so just repeatedly, this guy is just beating this girl up, but she's afraid to go back to her dad. She's just being abused over and over and over again. And she remembers the words of her dad that told her not to go, and that these would be the consequences of her actions. But he also told her, one day you'll come back to me, and I'll love you like I've always loved you. And so now he's sitting across the table from her, and she's got bruises all over her arms, and she's got bruises on her face. And he's saying, don't you know that I've always loved you? And that your choices will never change that. They'll never change that. Don't you see that that's all of us? All of us come into this room having made choices to distance ourselves from God. And if we'll just turn back to Him, He'll look us in the eye and He'll tell us of the hope that He has for us to pull us in. And some of you are asking the question, you're like, how can I know that this promise to Israel through Hosea is for me? Well, in the New Testament, after Jesus came, one of his good friends caught the language of Hosea and actually applied it directly to us. In 1 Peter 2, 9 and 10, the Apostle Peter writes this, "But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." You see, that verse 10 is directly from Hosea. And he's talking about people who have placed their trust in Jesus. You see, Hosea's name means salvation. Hosea is like a Jesus figure in the Old Testament that points us toward Jesus. In fact, they have the same name. If you translate Hosea from Hebrew into Greek, you would get the name Jesus. You see, Jesus is the one who not only came to love the adulterous woman, but he also came to die in her place. So the evidence that you have tonight that you can receive God's mercy is because Jesus is the better Hosea, who's come to rescue all of us. So here's sort of the final statement that I want to leave you with. It's this. God needs reasons to be angry at you, but he doesn't need any reason to love you. His love is totally and completely free. And it's just on the table. And the only qualification you have is to be totally and completely messed up. So I'm just asking you, will you just receive the love of God for you tonight? Let's just pray and just, no matter where we're at, we all just need to experience his love in fresh ways, because it's so hard for us to believe that a love like this could exist. So God, we just, we bow our heads and we just, we admit to you, God, we see ourselves in Gomer just being wayward and turning away from you. God, we see ourselves in the name of Hosea's daughter, in the name of his sons. Just people who turn away from your mercy and who choose not to be your people and who choose to just be destroyed by the consequences of our actions rather than run back to you. And so, God, we just want to take this opportunity, having heard your word, just to turn back to you now. To say, God, we need you as our dad. We need you as our perfect father who will never stop loving us. And God, we need you as our perfect husband who will love us despite our turning away from you, God. So would you just soak us in your presence as we sing to you? In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.